outside the box of religious obligation lies a road less travelled, into the heart of the Father's affection. Slinging freedom all over the place, this is the God Journey. The God Journey.
So Wayne, I got humbled today by one of my students.
Humbled?
Humbled.
Is that humiliated or you mean humbled?
Humbled. I would say humbled.
Okay, good.
Not full on humiliated, but I would definitely say humbled.
Those two run close sometimes.
Oh, they definitely tend to walk a tightrope every once in a while. We were doing practicing in my intro to counseling skills class, preparing for the final. And I have a very thoughtful student. They are still a high school student, but they have found the value in the in-person classes. So they literally drive to the college and take classes in person. And they've taken a couple classes from me. And so today they were practicing for prepping for the final. And I was this student's client because we had an odd number of students today. And so they needed me to practice. And I found myself having a very reflective, very well-guided conversation with a high school student and was incredibly impressed, to the point that said high school student asked me a couple of questions about some things that I have been kind of holding a lot of stress on and wrestling with. And they asked me a question and challenged my thought process. And I realized, no, I don't have to do that. I can say no to that and I can release that and I'm okay. And everything's going to be all right. And I found myself being liberated from stress in the middle of a practice session by a high school student for their final exam. It was awesome.
And how did that humble you?
There's a lot of conversation that I have about young people and their ability to connect with people relationally, their interpersonal skills, their ability to be present with others, and just how that's a growth area often for that generation. And yet I found myself in a conversation with somebody from that exact demographic that was asking me very intentional, very thoughtful questions that pulled something out of me that I didn't even know was there. It was fun to have the faculty member or the instructor become the student as this individual was practicing honing their skill set. And so, yeah, it was awesome. Well, it was fun to be involved with it.
That sounds like a pretty good educational process right there.
It was pretty good educational process. They got the concept. So
that's awesome. Well, I'm Wayne Jacobson.
And I'm Kyle Rice.
And welcome to this episode of The God Journey.
So best thing you heard.
Oh, you can ask me first.
Oh, well, I can go first. That's fine.
After you.
Okay. So I have bumped into, and I've been trying to choose which one I want to share, because there's been this ongoing theme in the last probably couple of weeks in the conversations that I've been having. And it's a lot to do with pace. And again, circling back to the idea of the tyranny of the urgent, et cetera. And I think the one that I landed on actually was a Joyce Meyer quote, which I don't interact with a lot of her content.
Oh my gosh, you probably watch your videos all day long, Kyle.
Nope, that's not the case. But one of her quotes came across, somebody posted it on Instagram and it came across my feed, and it says, "Patience is not the ability to wait, but how you act while you're waiting." That caught me off guard. I was like, okay, I like that, because I think about that a lot of the time when I'm thinking about slowing down or God's asking me to take a deep breath and pause and just be present. And it's more about, okay, what is my behavior? What is my mindset? What is my heart stance when I'm in that space? Am I twiddling my thumbs and saying, all right, God, hurry up. It's time for you to come through. Like, I'm done waiting on this. Or am I actually able to engage with presence? Am I able to engage with the process and relax into what he's doing instead of having to kind of press on to the next thing or try to initiate the next thing? So I really like that. It's not the ability to wait, but how you act while you're waiting.
Okay. And the idea of acting would be to be at rest and relaxed?
Yeah. Rest, love, and play.
Anxious and despondent
and striving and trying to do it in my own strength, which is not patience at all. So
I know it well. I know all that stuff well.
Yep. What about you?
This could send us on a conversation for sure. This is from Christian. This is from Sari. This is from Sarah F. Sherry on a Christianity Today piece she wrote. Thinking about her locked her relatives who live in Iran, and she's Iranian, but she's in the U.S. Thinking about her relatives in the midst of this war, locked in the room, fearing for their lives. And she got thinking about that in reference to the disciples, who on the day of the resurrection were also locked in a room, scared out of their brains and worried about persecution by the Romans.
Okay.
And she said, and Jesus, this is what she wrote, Jesus came and stood among them and said, peace be with you. He does not deny their fear, nor does he promote retaliation. Instead, Christ speaks peace into a room shaped by fear.
Hmm.
And this is what she said, this peace is an invitation to a different way of being present.
Ooh.
That's the line that really hit me, a different way of being present. And he says, goes on, as the Father has sent me, I'm sending you. And the disciples are commissioned to embody power rather than taking it.
Oof.
Isn't that a flip on some things?
Oof. Yeah.
Yeah, I love that first, a different way of being present, at peace, when everything around you is fear and terror. I found when I read that phrase, I went, that's how I want to be present. And that's how I think God continues to shape my life. And then commissioned to embody power, which is a very different way to think of it than to take it. Jesus didn't come in there. You know, let's go to the Romans. Let's retaliate. Yep. They did bad stuff to me. Let's go do bad stuff to them. It just, man, he came a different way to be present in the world.
Hmm. I guess for me, the thing that initially activates in my heart is what kind of message does that send to our culture and our society today? If I was to be to live in that level of peace, that's the presence that I bring. That's the type of presence that I bring, especially in a world, we were just talking about this the other day in class, about a world that benefits from people's angst, that benefits from people's fear, that actually is catalyzing it intentionally as a source of control, as a source of gaining finance, as a source of continuing to gain power. I even saw this thing came across my Instagram feed, and it was about all of the things. It was a breakdown of each single state and what they were hiding from their people and the potential for each single state to have something disastrous that was going to occur. And I was like, the entire thing was based on fear. Like, what was the point of that? Like, why? I mean, were you just seeking somebody's click? Were you just seeking somebody's menial attention because you activated their fear about what's the scary thing that's in my state? I mean, it was sick. It was like, how is that the type of presence that we as a people and especially a culture are willing to settle for? Like, how is this fear-based, anxiety-based, adrenaline activating culture, why are we okay with this? Why is this the type of presence and the type of social experience that we're not only condoning, but giving our time and energy to?
Because we're easily manipulated by it, whether that's to buy stuff or jump on a bandwagon and increase someone else's power. I like the idea of embodying power by being at peace. And being able to speak peace into the world, not just as Jesus spoke it into their room, but I can speak it into someone else's. It may not be peace, maybe something else of godliness, but seeing that as real power, not the manipulation of a following of some kind. I've been chomping on that for a week or two.
Well, I'm intrigued. Like, when you think about embodying power, again, I think about, okay, the way that God does that, the way that the Holy Spirit, the way that kingdom would look at that, is probably, in fact, almost guaranteed different than the way that the world perceives power. And so I'm intrigued, what do you think that means when you think about embodying kingdom power in this world versus trying to take it? How does that translate for you?
I think of taking it as some kind of temporal exercise for my benefit. And I think of embodying power, the power of the kingdom, just embodying peace embodying calm, embodying those things, how that can change the atmosphere of a conversation or room. So it has incredible power in that sense,
yeah,
but not in a temporal sense of the way we normally think of power, which is to control and to manipulate and to dominate.
Hmm.
What that all means, I have no idea. I'm willing to chomp on it for a while and see how that makes itself clear.
There's something also, when I think about that, when you're embodying it, there's a sense of knowing, there's a sense of groundedness, a sense of rest in it, to where you're not needing to take it. There isn't the angst of it being stolen or somebody grabbing it from you or somebody lying about you and manipulating you or trying to steal. I mean, it's not there. If you are embodying something that is a gift to you, that kingdom, you're a doorway for the kingdom to represent that into the world, that's very different. It doesn't have the pressure or the fear or the angst around, okay, what happens tomorrow if I don't have the power or have the authority tomorrow?
It takes the competition out of it, doesn't it? Because
oh yeah,
earthly power is always about, I've got to take it from you or risk you taking it from me. So it's always competitive. And it's yeah, always measured on who can manipulate the moment the best. And the real power of the kingdom has nothing to do with that. My living in that reality and you living in that reality is not competing. It's complementing and collaborating.
Yes.
And yeah,
it's that connected worldview of, yep, if I'm embodying that, if I'm embodying the strength and the power that God has given me to embody in the world, to represent in the world, that's benefiting others, and it's beneficial to me to have people who are living more wholehearted in their God-given identity and living that out in the world, embodying that strength, that authority. I mean, then we're mutually rising up. We're mutually moving together in a more wholehearted direction versus the scarcity mentality, which is the worldview on our natural worldview on power, which is there's a very limited amount, and it's either the haves or the have-nots, and I'm going to be one of the haves.
Yes. This recognizes that all the power ultimately is in God's hands.
Yeah.
It's not in ours. It's what Jesus is doing. And if we're flowing with it, then we're part of what he's about. And if we're not flowing with it, then we're going to get tricked into doing stuff by worldly power that's going to be destructive, maybe advantageous to me. It's going to be destructive to other people around me.
Okay. So how does the embodiment of God's power, how does the embodiment of that differ from the illusion of power that I would say is the world's perception? Because people say, oh, I've got power. I have the ability to take their freedom or to take their money or that, you know, whatever they've got, however they want to quote it, whatever power or control that they have.
Or just make people do what they want. If a boss of an organization, his power is I get to make people do what I need them to do,
yeah,
or punish them in some way.
Yeah.
I think the kingdom is so different from that. So absolutely different. Just if you're around somebody that just communicates peace into a room or communicates trust into a room, that I think of Kevin Smith, my friend from Australia, who since passed away. Yeah. I learned a depth of trust in God by watching the way he lived. Mm. It wasn't his words. It was his life and his relationship with Father. And that was compelling. And yet it wasn't competitive. He wasn't taking anything away from me or pushing me in any particular direction. It was inviting and it was glorious.
Hmm. Okay, so this is kind of changing topic a little bit.
Segue here.
That's okay.
Sure.
You mentioned something the other day as we were talking, and I kind of wanted to circle back to it. So you mentioned this idea of, so in the past, you mentioned that you've been experiencing some vision stuff that you weren't sure what was going on and started right around when you were diagnosed with cancer, correct?
No, happened a year or two before that.
Before that? Okay. Well, you mentioned the other day that it had come back or that you were having a different experience with it. And so I just wanted to check in and say, just see, like, what's going on with that? Like what's happening? What's changing? What are you seeing in that? Or how are you experiencing that now after a couple of years, 2 or 3 years of being in it?
Yeah, I never know how to talk about this because it's the strangest part of my spiritual life. that has no precedent and has no way to understand it. And so I always kind of hold it at arm's length going, is this God, not God? Am I just going nuts here slowly? Is this whatever? So especially, I think when we talk about visions and things, people get a real weird sense of what that is. And then they kind of wish they were having something that Wayne's having. And so I'm very careful about how I talk about it normally in conversations with people. And then when this goes out on a podcast to people who I don't know how they're receiving it, I don't know how they respond to it. But yeah, for those that don't know, gosh, a few years ago, this was somewhere in that first year, I think, of Sarah being back in my life after the kaboom. I was praying with a group, and all of a sudden, I've had visions before, like an image in my mind that communicated something of godliness to me.
Yeah,
I've rarely or if ever seen actual colors and objects and things with my eyes closed that I'm looking at just as if my eyes were open. I mean, I see them. And this began just in a prayer time. And we've talked around this a little bit, so I don't want to go back to the whole thing because it's weird in the sense that the vision never stops. In the sense that it's still unfolding. It's not like I had a vision and this is what I learned from it, but it's like a story being told to me. And I've talked to even to my ophthalmologist about it. I said, hey, look, this is what's going on. I told her a little bit about it. She's not a Christian. And she was like, the only question she really had, she asked me a few questions. And then she got down to, when you're having these, do you know they're not real? And I said, yeah, I know they're not real in terms of this world. They seem very real in terms of another world. And she said, well, you're not hallucinating then. I said, yeah, it doesn't feel like that. She said, well, it's okay with me. I'm okay. It's but the okay first was first was like a plane slowly flying through the clouds and never actually getting into a cloud, but flying through beyond around cloud banks. And so it was breathtaking. Others were praying. I finally disconnected from the prayer things. I couldn't concentrate on that and keep track of what was going on. I just watched this slow moving flight through and around banks of clouds. I keep thinking, something's on the other side of this, something's on the other side of it. And there wasn't. It just kind of ended because we were talking and I needed to rejoin.
Yeah.
But there was a real sense of presence about it. There was a real sense of presence inside whatever was unfolding here. That went on over days. It doesn't happen every time I pray. It doesn't happen maybe once or twice a week, maybe, and then there'll be days, weeks when it is nothing. Okay. It's nothing I've tried to manufacture, but it went on to seeing shapes and images of things that it looked like something, a scientist's conception of dark matter, which I saw online about a week after I had the actual image in my head. I mean, I saw this like glittery filaments that just inhabit space. They just wrap around everything. And when I see it, I think of Colossians 1 about in him all things hold together. So this is somehow what Jesus does to contain the planet. And when I see it, whatever it is that's going on in the world or in my life, I have the sense of it's all in his hands. This is, he wraps around everything going on, including wars and lies and political rancor and all that stuff. And then I, at one point, saw something in it. I'm actually trying to write up the vision now a little bit. Okay. I don't know how quickly I'll have it done, but I read something in Julian of Norwich's visions, which she had, an old mystic from way back. Mm-hmm. And she had these series of 13 visions. And at the end, she said, the reason I'm sharing them is because I realize when God gives something like this, it's a gift to be shared, not something to be held in private. And that just went, okay, I've been holding this in private because I don't know how to explain it to people. It has definitely transformed my spiritual journey in ways I couldn't even begin to describe. Because it's colors, it's images. At one point, I saw some blurb in this color, some image. I couldn't figure out what it was. And this these filaments is all around it. And then one day I'm in my podiatrist's office. I think I've told this before in the podcast. I was in my podiatrist's office, and he said he's going to go out of the room for a minute. So I just leaned back in his chair and closed my eyes. And when I closed my eyes, the vision started. And I thought, not here, not now. And all of a sudden, this beautiful color I was seeing flipped into a charcoal sketch of a human eyeball. And I went, what? It was so jarring. It just flipped and then it went away. And then he walked back in the room and I went, okay, well, I couldn't wait to get out of my car and go, what was that?
Yeah.
And then I realized what I've been seeing in this vision that I couldn't figure out is a giant eyeball in the back of the color and the images that I've been seeing.
Hmm.
And so processing, this is over weeks, man, and months.
Yeah.
Processing that, I finally came to conclude, is this God's eye looking at me? Or am I seeing through God's eyes at what he sees in the world? And I really came to that second thing, the whole gaze with God thing we've talked about.
Yeah.
So I really feel like, yeah, I'm gazing through the eyes of God. It's not looking at me. I'm looking with it. That was the sense of it. And then there was a whole lot of other stuff. But I, where that's kind of fallen over the last maybe year is when I'm sometimes when I pray, either for something specific or just communing with God, these colors come into my vision, this big, massive, beautiful, living color. Mm. And they're different colors for different things that I sense. There's sometimes you're sensing God's justice and God's setting things right. And that's a very powerful blackish red kind of image.
Mm. Okay.
A color. And there's others that has to do more with glory and freedom, and they're more yellowy, light, whatever. And then there's some that go toward, and when I say about these colors, I know people probably think in primary colors. These are not that. These are otherworldly colors. I don't see them in our environment anywhere. And they're heavily, it's like a mass of things in it making up the color. So there's no primary field of color. It's impossible to describe, but
I'm like, yeah.
The only thing comes close to it is like some kind of pixelated something with lots of little pieces that make up the color. I can see the pieces, but it comes off as one color, but with much in it. So black and red is one thing. Yellow and oranges is another. Green and blue is another. And so when I pray, it has in effect sometimes shaped my prayer. If I'm praying for peace and I see that red blackness stuff, then I'm starting, okay, there's something about God wants to do here, some justice God wants to bring to this. And so I look for what that is, what I sense that might be. So anyway, this happens even last week, 2 weeks ago, I'm in Minneapolis and I'm praying and I see color and I'm going, oh gosh, it's changed my prayer life because I don't mind praying for like a long time now because when that's happening, it's just a deal.
Yeah.
But over the last, until 2 months ago, I would say over the last 8 months before that, it's just become a shadow of color at certain times. It hasn't become anything. And then I was out one day in our backyard, just sitting in Sarah's garden, and just closed my eyes a minute to be with God. And the whole vision started from the very beginning, the first flying through the clouds, every stage of it. I reviewed the whole thing in about half an hour. It just all unfolded. And I'm like, I see everything here. I see the eyeball. I see the world. I see the redemption. I see it all. And I'm watching it unfold. And I've always felt like this vision doesn't get anywhere. It's supposed to land somewhere. It's not supposed to last for years. Who ever heard of a vision lasting for years? I mean, Juliet of Norwich had 13 different visions over a few years, but not the same thing. So on this, as I went through the whole thing again, and I am just in it, loved, at peace, just overwhelmed by beauty, overwhelmed by presence. And then on the bottom of my field of vision, the bottom of it, I could see something pulsing and I could see ripples of waves going up through the rest of the thing. It was mostly oranges, beauty up on top. And now there's something darker down the bottom, but not darker in a sinister way.
Yeah.
And then it began to kind of bubble up. And as it bubbled up, it was all the colors that you see when you see a photograph or video of an embryo inside the womb. It's the same kind of translucent colors.
Mm-hmm.
They're not bright. They're more
muted.
Yeah, more muted matte. And greens and browns and things that look like a living thing, a fetus or something like that. But it's not in that shape. It's just the whole field of vision at the bottom, and then it would send the lift up in one place and then go down again and lift up again. And I'm sitting there just staring at this and go, what is this? And the next thought in my head after sitting with this for a while and just watching this life, and I could feel if the feelings are accurate, what I could feel was God's passion for this thing, God's love, God wanting this with everything in his being, amazing desire and passion. And then I heard the words, "This is the city waiting to be born."
Ooh.
Yeah.
Okay.
And so to make a longer story shorter, I think that's, I mean, scripture talks about a city of God, talks about the New Jerusalem being the city where there's no doors on it. People come in and go out. Jesus is the light of it. It just seems to be what I was captured with. This is the city, God's redemption of humanity, in which we all live together in peace and justice and joy and no threat and no self-protection needed because of the safety of that space. And I watched it for a significant amount of time and just could feel God's desire to give birth to the city. Now, I don't know. In some sense, I think he's already giving birth to that city on the planet through lives that are learning to live in his love and embrace him.
Yeah.
But I thought it may have had some kind of apocryphal overtones as well, that this is the New Jerusalem. This is the ultimate redemption of humanity, which God has. I have never felt delight and desire to such proportion as I held in that space with God. As much as I've talked about at times being inside God's grief and feeling the agony of that, this was hope and delight times 1,000. Does that make any sense at all?
I mean, I can't say that I have had an experience like that, that I could say, oh yeah, absolutely. It makes perfect sense to me. Now, Ingrid, but I would
speechless. Are you?
It just feels like it is yet another piece of what God's up to in the world. I don't know. There's just, it just seems like the themes of this ongoing conversation about something new being birthed, something that is coming up, that's rising up, that's not conventional, that it's not through the expectations of the norms that we have espoused to who God is or his kingdom. And yet he's passionate about it, and it's living and it's breathing and it's active and it's ever growing. And it's, man, so the interesting part that as you were talking about that is, it brought up a conversation that I was having with a good friend of mine, and he was talking about this, I guess, conversation that another person had where they had gotten taken into heaven. And the first thing that they said that they experienced was that they didn't feel fear. And it was like this level of lightness and wholeheartedness and being loved and complete, unlike anything that they could put language around, because of the void of fear. And then he talked about how it goes on into a conversation about seeing lights and the street of gold, and yet gold didn't put it into accurate terms. Like, that was a decent illustration, but that didn't like actually encapsulate what he was seeing. And more like these pulsing rays of energy that had these different tones of light. And it just like, my response to it as we were talking about it was, what would it be like to be completely void of fear? What would it be like to be in that space and be completely void of shame, or to be completely void of this feeling of incomplete or inadequate? Like, I don't know. It just... it's exciting to me. It's intriguing to me. It, like, this is the city waiting to be born. I'm like, okay, Lord, like, so what's, I guess one of the thoughts was, what's holding it back from being born? Like, what's getting in the way? Because I would love to see more of God's kingdom and his power born and released into this world in in an authentic and genuine way. And so that's one of my questions would be like, Lord, what is the city waiting on? What's
well, it wouldn't still be a question back? You'd ask of an 8-month pregnant woman, would it? What's holding this back? I don't think anything's holding it back.
Yeah.
I think it's time. There's a time of its coming. There's a time where God's putting all, to use a horrible metaphor, put all his ducks in a row, you know, where everything is lining up in the redemption of humanity, whatever. Because when you just talked about all those things, to imagine a wholehearted life without fear, without this, without that, I'm thinking, what would it be to live inside a community in which there's no manipulation, no control,
oh my gosh.
No reason to be careful about your words, what someone might say or do, or how somebody might. I was with a guy yesterday that's been stabbed in the back in a major way, incredibly hurtful. He drove some distance to come and just sit with me. He said, is it okay if I spend some time? And I said, yeah, if you want to come, I'll sit down with you. And he wanted to share. He said, because I've watched you manage this space. I've heard you talk about it. And I want to be like you. I want to navigate this space, not with the anger and humiliation and things I could give my life into, but how does God make redemption of this? And I think part of this for me is the excitement I feel welling up is this is what God always had in mind when he made the world before shame and sin and turning on each other and all that became in part of the human experience. This was a way he wanted us to live together. Can we do it now in part? Those of us who find our freedom in Jesus and find relationships that are meaningful and not manipulative and not filled with guilt and shame, but people that just when you're with them, you feel like you take a deep breath, you get to relax, you get to learn, discover, share freely, encourage as much as you're being encouraged. To me, there's something about all of this has a process that's unfolding. And the anticipation, it's not like something's holding it back, but something isn't complete yet. Something is not fully formed. This is a city waiting to be born. And these things that push up, pulse out, and I've seen it since. I've not just seen it the one time. I've seen it other times. And I just, it's a bit weird because as much as God's asked me at times to hold his agony for the destruction of the world, now I'm getting to share something of his joy. And I hope, the first time this experience happened to me, when I was in this prayer room with people, we've been praying for the world for already a few years.
Yeah.
And I was hoping it was a corporate thing, that I could look up and say, are you guys seeing this? And I did, and they were going, what are you talking about? I'm going, I cried. And I've had it other times in that group, and I've had it other times when I'm out, and I'm always, is anybody else seeing this? I hope maybe one essence of sharing this on the podcast is somebody said, I'm having something similar and it's over here. I don't know.
Yeah.
But it is rewriting some things in my heart because I think about like, even if it's apocryphal in nature, the apocryphal thing is always about, oh my gosh, what disasters are coming.
Correct.
Not what's waiting to be born. What has God held in his heart for all of human history since we went sideways early on? That I'm going to eventually produce this. The thing that I think most people, whether they're Christians or not, hunger for that city whose builder is God. They may not know it. They may not know it's God's city, but they know the pain of relationships that are manipulative and destructive. And they've maybe known a few that have been nurturing and safe and wonderful. But the hunger is to live in that space with a broad group of people that doesn't need to be orchestrated or controlled by humanity's power. Let's get back to where we were earlier, but simply is the fruit of people who are living in the reality of love and therefore don't need to manipulate those around them. And if everybody's doing that, then no one has to be afraid of being taken advantage of or being somehow used in some way. Like, I'll get something from you that I'm going to then use against you, which is, I mean, that's what I started dealing with yesterday with this brother and I've had numerous experiences in my own life where people have, yes, I'm your brother. And yes, things are wonderful. And yes, we'll do this, blah, blah. And then there comes a point where I would rather exploit you than share with you.
Yeah.
And then that's where it all goes sideways. And I, man, there's such an excitement now. It's like you look forward to not what's ending, but what's coming. Hmm. And that's captured my heart.
I think that's the, I mean, growing up with the like Left Behind series and most of the conversations, you know, growing up along Revelation and the end of the world and the apocalypse and all these different things, there was never conversation about birth. There was never, it was always, I really hope it's pre-trib so that I don't have to go through all that pain and suffering. And that, you know, it was the whole mantra of, I hope that I get to avoid the pain of that experience. There was no conversation about, for example, when the sons and daughters are revealed to the world. There's no conversation about that. There was no conversation about the bride of Christ being unveiled and revealed and moving in the world. There's none of that. It was all about avoiding the pain of the plagues and the awful things that are going to happen to humanity and all these different things. And man, it was like, okay, I guess I'm going to hope that it's pre-trib because that doesn't sound very fun at all. Like, I don't want to be a part of that, but you know, I guess whatever. And we'll cross that bridge when we come to it, you know, and even the fear of like waking up and being like, is my family still here? Did they all get taken up and I didn't, you know, all those questions. But there was never a conversation about a birthing of new life or a restoration of what did God have? What was his intent for humanity? Because that, what you described, like that is the essence of a connected worldview. Yeah. It's wholehearted people living in existence alongside of one another, loving one another, building community together, building one another up, sharing and rejoicing in each other's victories and strengths and overcoming things, whatever it might be. And that to me, when you talk about that, like I think about people in my life and in my world, and I just think about, man, what would they be like if they didn't have blank? If they were completely free of X, Y, and Z? And I can't, like, I mean, I think about what kind of husband and dad would I be without some of the pain and trauma and angst and things that some of the complex trauma stuff that happened? Yeah. What would my wife be like? What will my wife be like when she's completely set free from some of the things that have caused her great fear and anxiety, and she's not having to deal with panic attacks and night terrors anymore? Like, I think what will Sarah be like when she is completely released from any fear of what other people think about her or about the world around her? I mean,
or just the safety of not being prey.
Yes.
That would alone be glorious. And I have in my life, my travels, I probably have 2 to 3 dozen people with whom I share this kind of relationship.
Yeah.
Openness, honesty, nobody gets threatened. No one's competing. No one's trying to convince somebody else of what they should be doing that's better than whatever. There's just love and support. And it's not that it can't be honest about differences. You can be. And it's just wonderful. And I think about, as you were talking about this birth pain, or there's times when Jesus actually says about the troubles of the last days, these are the birth pangs, but it's not here yet. Mm. And I've never thought about what the birth pangs were always leading to the devastation and destruction of the world.
Correct.
The birth pains were not like a mother going, yeah, I don't like these birth pains. I'd like to skip these. I can't imagine any mother that wouldn't want to skip those. But who, for the joy set before her focus, if she's going to navigate this well, her focus would be on the birth of the child, not the pain of the mother, not the contractions, not. And yet, going through that, and I first saw this blob in this vision thing, and this pulsing and this rippling out into the other space. And I think, is that what's going on? The last throes of darkness, the somehow trying to impede what God's doing. And Jesus even saying the gates of hell will not prevail against it. So no matter what the enemy's trying to do, there is a process of God giving birth to something. And just even now in my life, just the phrase, the city waiting to be born, makes me smile. It brings delight to my heart. Just immediately, when I look at all the stuff going on, I mean, we had the shooting with the president this weekend and all the disasters going on in the world. And I just think about a city waiting to be born. It's so the opposite of the city. It's so the opposite of where humanity lives. And this is the city waiting to be born. And this brings more delight to my father than anything I can think of. He is so delighted to see this come to fruition. And I can live in it today. I can live in that city. Yes, it's in part. Yes, I see it as through a glass darkly. But the relationships I have, I've called some people this week just because I wanted to tell them, you're some of those relationships for me. You are the place where I've learned what the city of God can be when lives are at rest in his love, instead of acting out of all our illusionary need for control or all our false self-imaging or all of that stuff. If people could just be at rest in God's love, what harmony and joy and what could happen among people who live there?
I mean, for me, the thing that went through my mind is I can't imagine the level of anticipation like that. Like, I feel like I think about, man, what would it be like for the three girls in my life to be completely free of any angst, fear, anxiety, like to be completely released into all of the glory that they were created to embody by God. Mm-hmm. Like, gosh, that is freaking excited. Like, to be father and be sitting there with anticipation of that being a reality for every single person on the planet. Like, what? Like, the amount of anticipation, I can't, like, he does a really good job waiting. Like, his character during the waiting period are really solid, because I would not have the same level of character and response.
Well, I don't think he's waiting. I think he's working.
Oh, that's fair. Okay, that's fair.
And its coming is inevitable.
That picture, something waiting to be birthed, city waiting to be born. Awesome. Incredible. Going to take a little bit to chew on. Isn't there a second piece? Like, you said there was a part two or another part of the picture that you had. Like, where do we go from here?
There's more that unfolded in this piece that I want to share with you, but we run out of time. So let's do it next week.
Okay. Part two it is then.
Thank you for traveling with us today on The God Journey. You can join this conversation by visiting thegodjourney.com.